We're Kyler and Cody McCormick, two brothers on a journey to pave our own path while chasing our passion.
While building our adventure filmmaking brand, The Outbound Life, we've become sponsored by some of the top brands in the film and travel industries, acquired Fortune 500 clients, and have spoken on stages all across the country sharing our story.
We now invite you along on our journey as we sit down with inspiring entrepreneurs, creators, and diverse thought leaders to discuss how to live a life we consider outbound, a life where you believe your story matters and live beyond your limits.
Come along and live the outbound life.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're very excited for who we are chatting with today. This man really needs no introduction, but we'll read a little bio of Matthew McConaughey. Matthew is a Texas native and one of Hollywood's most sought after leading men. A chance meeting in Austin with casting director and producer Don Phillips led him to director Richard Linklater, who helped launch the actor's career. Since then, he has won an Academy Award, appeared in over 40 films that have grossed over $1 billion, and he's become an author, producer, philanthropist with his Just Keep Living Foundation, all while sticking to his Texas roots and Just Keep Living philosophy. He is co-owner of the Austin FC Soccer Club and a professor at the University of Texas in Austin. In 2020, McConaughey released his first book, Green Lights, which became an instant New York Times number one bestseller and has sold over 3 million copies worldwide. His second book, which is a children's book titled Just Because, was released September 2023 and also became an instant New York Times number one bestseller. He currently resides in Austin, Texas with his wife, Camilla, and their three kids. All right, Matthew, thanks for being here. We are just so honored. We're so excited.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks you for the intro. I did not know Greenlight sold over 3 million copies. That's pretty doggone cool.
That's pretty good. Right.
Hey.
Speaking of that, there was a little something you did, I don't know, a week or two ago in New York, lighting up.
Yeah.
Put a little light, you could say, up in the sky that was colored green, celebrating. I think it's coming up on 100
weeks. Yeah. How cool is that? I mean, that's like a bucket. Someone said that's a bucket lister that you don't even know can be on the bucket.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, who do you talk to have that situation come about? I saw you made an Instagram post about it, and I just assume that's pretty surreal getting to be in New York City of all places, Empire State Building green. What did that feel like looking up, seeing green because of you?
Well, I mean, I was surprised on the day when I walked in. I thought I was going to another interview about the book. And I walk in and my wife's sitting there and I look over and there's cameras and about 40 people. I'm like, what's going on? Hi, what's going on? She turns this journal around to me and says, read aloud, please. So I read it and read, hey, you know, 3 years ago, I wrote Green Lights and it's about to hit 100 weeks. And in honor of that, congratulations, that we're going to light up the Empire State Building green. And I had to do the math right there about, am I in the Empire State Building right now? Because I didn't know. I'm just doing press. I'm walking indoors, right? I'm just following my post. She's going,
I'm in a building right now. Yeah.
I'm in a building. And I go, am I in here right now? And they're like, and then the lady steps up, yes, you are in the Empire State Building. Next thing we know, we're going up to the top. And then that night, you know, we pulled the lever and everything that afternoon. But that night to see it lit up green going, that's not Disneyland. Those aren't drones. That really is the Empire State Building lit up green across the New York sky tonight. Pretty cool, man. I, you know, 100 weeks I've been as a traveler, you know, I run into people and people are fans of mine for different reasons. If you are a fan of mine, they're a fan of mine for different reasons around the world. All right. Please. Hey, say it. Or it'd be a lot cooler if you did. But they come up and they go, oh, Rustin Cole, man, that character. But in the last year and a half, I've had hundreds of people stop me around the world and mostly males 25 to 45 and go, green lights. And I go, yes. They go, man, read it and let's do it. So awesome. I go, thank you. And they'll stop me. And without permission, kind of put an arm on my shoulder and like turn me to make sure I look them in the eye.
Yeah.
They go, dude, I'm telling you, changed my life, man. I'm like going, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's one that it's really cool. And I'll ask why. And some of them say, hey, help me take risk that I was not wanting to take for so long. And I finally took it. And now I'm in this continent that I wouldn't have been in before I read it. Or this relationship. or this job, or I made this life change where I was on the wrong track and I couldn't just quite give myself a kick in the butt enough to get myself out of it and get on the right track. And it helped me. So to hear that, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, when it came out, we took some time, and again, so we're brothers that run our company and we're in the creative space, and to be able to read, a book that where you break down so many key principles and areas that you've pushed into in your life. I think, especially as a creative, we were able to really understand some of the language you spoke with, but then just how you're able to package it up.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the same thing. We'll run into people, and bring up the book and we've read it.
Yeah. Well, and Matthew too, one of the things you just said, it's like, as you're traveling around, when people are grabbing you, oftentimes you see them kind of in that demographic, like let's say 25 to 45 year old male, surprise, surprise, Cody and I are in that demographic as well. Like, why do you, and it speaks to people outside of that demographic as well, but why do you feel like that demographic in particular, this is becoming not like a Bible of sorts, but like, very important.
A guidebook. Well, yeah. It's a good question. One, masculinity, the definition of masculinity for young men today it's been gutted. And a lot of us are going, what does it mean? We know it doesn't mean, like the olden days, macho. We know it doesn't mean that, but what does it mean? It does it have a place. And it's lost its definition. It's got a moving definition. It's being redefined now, or at least we're being told it needs to be redefined.
Right.
And so a lot of young men are searching for our identity. I'm male, I'm masculine, but what does that mean? And so I think that's part of what young men are getting from the book. They're seeing a masculinity that is masculine, that is not macho, that has someone like me that says, hey, here's where I've succeeded. Oh, and here's where I've screwed up.
Yeah.
I think quickly became not a book for me as a celebrity. That may have gotten some people to read it early, but it quickly became something that, it's McConaughey. He's a dude, man. He's okay. I've been through some of this same stuff. I've screwed up some of these same ways. Now, the fact that I'm a celebrity helped, because I think someone, one, it got some to read it, but two, they go, you who I think may have be much more fluent or have all these things. Oh, you go through this too.
Yeah.
Gone through it and you still go through it. And this has nothing to do with celebrity. This has to do with you being a human, with being a man. Ah, okay. And look, y'all know this, man. Sometimes when we can, most of the time, I think when we're going through individually something that's tough in our life, when we're going through it, we think we're the only one going through it.
Yeah,
we think
we're
revolving around our problem.
Yeah.
And when, or our challenge, and when we talk to someone else and they go, oh, me too, man. I know you're talking. We're like, it doesn't solve it, but it lets you know, it's part of the condition. We're all trying to figure that out. I'm not the only one on this path.
Yeah. Well, I think some of that vulnerability has been helpful. Like, you're pretty vulnerable in the book, and yet you still hold a pretty masculine approach. And I think back to some of the stories you share from your childhood. Looking at the dynamics of your parents, how your dad, was a leader in the family, and some of his approaches, could have leaned more on the macho side, and you've taken certain things from your dad, and then you've tweaked them. Being a father now yourself, I'm curious, even in that vein, like, is there anything that comes to mind that you did take from your dad specifically that now you bring to your kids?
Yeah, I mean, a whole lot. And if you read the chapters in my father's means of discipline, I in no way blame or think he was wrong.
Yeah.
It's good. It's how he went about it. It was more corporal than I'm choosing to go about it, but I'm not gonna be arrogant enough to go, that was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope, or what's evolution for, that I'm updating and amending my ways of rearing us. I mean, I think that's what we all want to do, or what the heck's evolution for? But the principles that he was about, I'm still trying to instill and working to instill in our kids. You know, I always tell that story that morning. And my dad, we had certain words that we got in trouble for. And the lessons in life are the opposite of the words, meaning can't. That was a dirty word. I'm having trouble was just fine. I'm unable to do it myself, but I can then find someone to help me get it done. Does not mean I can't.
Yeah, right.
And T would make my dad's molars just go. And you were like, oh, what did I do? Oh, I got it. I said that word.
Yeah, yeah.
Hate. Man, I got my first butt whooping at my own 5-year-old birthday party. I said, I hate you to my brother because I'd heard it like from some ledge. And I thought it would be like a cool thing, like a cool, I'm up with you, you know.
Ledgy.
Yeah, a little. And my mom stopped the party. My party stopped it. And I had to lean against the wall. I got a butt whooping for saying I hate to my brother. I didn't even know what it really meant. But boy.
Lesson learned.
And hate, to respond to your own name, to know you that you were named, you know, I got in trouble for answering to Matt on the playground in kindergarten. You named Matthew for a reason. I was named Matthew for a reason. Gift of God. It's out of the Bible. This is why we name you this. Bah, 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 yeah. Bah. And don't lie. So what are the opposites? If I got in trouble for the words, which I did, and both my brothers did too, what did we learn? Oh, okay. The meaning of those words bring discomfort, pain to life. So I'm going to do the opposite, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The opposite. Well, opposite of can't is I can, or if I'm trouble, I'm having trouble. The opposite of hate is love. The opposite of lying is being honest with yourself, mainly, and others, and answer to your own name. Or very, very positive ways to look, tunnels and lenses to look through life through that was ingrained in us. I'm still trying to work on that and ingrain that in my own children.
But the foundation is helpful.
Foundation on the positive, not in the same means that my mom and dad did, but still want to make sure they understand how important that is. And I hope that Camilla and I hope we're doing a good enough job that becomes less, not an intellectual exercise for them.
Yeah.
By the time that's something that's in their understanding and in their being.
Well, that's big. And it's really interesting as you talk about just like how your parents impacted you, the values that were non-negotiable, that when you are, you know, a child, you're not going to understand like, why is the word hate bad? Or why is saying I can't bad? But all these years later, that's really guided you to where you are today. I would love to talk about something that you certainly know very well. Cody and I know well because we happen to be brothers, and that is brotherhood. So, yeah. You know, so it's like in my family, I have two older brothers, right? Cody's one of them. In your family, you have two older brothers. I'm curious, like, even outside of your parents and some of the values they gave you, like, how were you impacted coming up having two older brothers?
So, look, how far apart are y'all, you two?
So we're like 2.5 years. So we're closer. You have definitely more separation, yeah.
Competed, you fought and all that stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
My older brothers are 69, 50, 50, 60, 69, 60, and I'm 50.
Okay.
Separate enough where the elder was the hero. The elder was the best.
Yeah.
You know, with that sibling. I mean, I didn't get to know my oldest brother until I was about 20 because he was already kind of out of the house, right? And my middle brother, Pat, you know, I'm 10, he's 17. He's my hero. There's no competition between them. He was better at everything, you know? But he also, you know, taught me things. He you know, I remember he taught me how to dance, man. You know? He introduced me to music. He was the one I looked up to him as my hero. My oldest brother, I've gotten to know since I turned 20, because especially after dad passed away, that he and I kind of came together. Yeah, I mean, you know, my middle brother did something, my old middle brother, Pat, did something really interesting that's been happened really quietly in our family. As soon as my dad passed away, my mom moved 3 different times to Texas. And very quietly, without anything being said, we kind of looked up and noticed Pat always moved to within 50 minutes of mom. So he was like, I'm off in Hollywood doing for the old brothers, off in Midland, West Texas, peddling pie. The middle brother is making sure he's 15 minutes from mom everywhere he went. It was beautiful, quiet poetry to that. But the loyalty in the heart of my middle brother, the loyalty is huge on loyalty. And I would say he's had some harder things happen to him in his life, or been had less luck in certain situations than me and his older brother have. You know, you also have this that's very interesting in my family. The middle brother, Pat, was adopted.
Yeah.
So I still to this day question like nature, nurture, you know, I've got 3 kids. I learned very quickly. Nature had more to do with it than I thought it was going to as soon as they're born. You know what I mean? Dad moved on. Rooster, my older brother, he and Rooster were best friends.
Okay.
So dad sort of values, I really kind of started to see through my oldest brother, Rooster. Then you also start to see as you get older in those late night after a couple of drinks, where the message was different than the messenger.
Yeah, yeah.
And one great thing about our family, and I think this would be healthy for everybody, is to, when you find out where the message was different than the messenger, from your patriarch or your matriarch or from your hero or your mentor, give them some amnesty quick. Because they were just trying to help you be a little bit better than them. Even if they weren't practicing what they were preaching.
Yeah.
I mean, and so we do have a tendency to be able to laugh very quickly in our family at things that where we find out were complete bullshit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you share stories about that, but to see, I mean, your family definitely has processed difficult things together. But at the same time, there's always a core side of humor that comes up, and it's like, I mean, to hear even the differences in your brothers. And kind of right, every family member brings something different to the family, different stability or different outlook. And you know, I see that in our family as well. And I mean, we're grateful to be able to work together. We're day in, day out, and haven't gotten sick of each other yet. I think for us, like, there's a bond that, you know, you just don't get with another coworker or something that we've been able to share, or a way that even we can communicate when we're on projects or working through different problems with clients and whatnot. Some of that really kicks in that I'll sit in the middle of like an intense problem and be like, I'm just thankful I got my brother here with me. You know,
right.
Like you have the backup basically.
That's blood. That's non-negotiable.
Yeah.
No matter what you guys are doing this.
Yeah.
The end of the day, there's certain some bonds you have that's not negotiable.
Yeah.
I'm dealing. I've got to my 2 sons now. They are close enough where they do compete.
Yeah.
Mm. Sure, trying to compete with the older one, you know. And sometimes when the older one competes back, I'm like, dude, you're already better at that. Be a mensch.
Yeah.
You know, back down to push back. It's just him trying to get there, help him out. Yeah. Sometimes, like, hey, he's coming at you, man. Stake your territory, bro. You know what I mean? But let them go at it, but reminding them that, man, when you go through this life, you're going to have friends, hopefully some really good friends, but you've got something now with each other that you may not see it or want to hang out with each other at this time, but going through life, you're going to be one non-negotiably person you can rely on for a late night call when you're lost.
Yeah.
for a late night call when you're hurting, for when somebody breaks up at you and you get your heart broken, man. And I also try to remind them, you got, because I got a sister in the middle.
Okay.
Daughter. So when they go off, I'm also trying to talk to them about that. I was like, hey, Levi, you're on the, you're all the older on the upside. Yeah. Levi's on the young side. Y'all go out. You know, so-and-so boy likes, you know, is interested. Y'all, it's, you, did it pass your test?
Yeah, you got to look out for her. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love hearing about that. Well, before we get even too far into some of these topics, I do want to talk about your book that just came out. So we got Just Because. It's a fun book, reading through it. Yeah, and also, we just saw it's already a number one New York Times bestseller. So congrats on
Incredible.
That. That's super exciting.
Yeah.
And I think first time I read through this, I was blown away just kind of with themes that you dive into. So you're diving into themes like nuance and paradox, but you really break it down in simple ways. I mean, we're talking a children's book here. But even as an adult, I feel like I take things from it and I can see what you mean behind it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool just because, like, okay, you hear there's a children's book coming out, right? And you have an idea in your head of what that's going to be. This is going to be for kids. You have some colorful pictures. But yeah, as to Cody's point, you're exploring things that are actually quite complicated, even to like adults like ourselves, right? But you simplify it in a way that even a child can understand, which right. is like, it's kind of mind blowing. And there's an Einstein quote. It's something along the lines of like, if you can't explain it to a 6-year-old, you don't understand it yourself.
Oh, amen. That's cool.
So I even think when people think about this children's book, there's almost a better way to think about it. It's something more along the lines of that Einstein quote. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool to us as we were reading that. But first off, I want to hear like, okay, you've done a book before, but like, where did the children's book come from?
So, I mean, I'm always trying to sell Sunday morning.
This episode is brought to you by The Land Report. The Land Report is the premier source of news, information, and insight into America's most valuable natural resource, land. The magazine of the American landowner, The Land Report has established itself as the voice of this uniquely American asset class, and is frequently a source for major media outlets, including The Wall Street Journal, Fox Business, Bloomberg, Barron's, and The New York Times, to name a few. This award-winning publication features exclusive landowner interviews with folks like famed actor and film director Clint Eastwood, Yellowstone creator Taylor Sheridan, and very recently, Red Emerson and family, the largest current landowners in the U.S. at 2.4 million acres. Subscriptions and news are always available on their website, landreport.com. This podcast is powered by Rode, the world's leading tech brand for content creators. And this podcast was recorded on the Rodecaster Pro 2, the ultimate all-in-one podcasting solution. Want to start your own podcast? Check Rode's incredible audio products at Rode.com. That's R-O-D-E.com.
Like a Saturday night.
Hmm.
A Monday morning. The responsibility.
Yeah.
Like a Saturday. Trying to make the broccoli taste as good. Right.
Yeah.
So music, one way. And I've been told I think rhythmically, and yeah. I think you opened up some of the stuff in Green Lights is not novel stuff. It's just I've put words in different orders and made things have a little bit of a sling and a rhyme. You're like going, in one way, the same thing could be said, and we feel like we're in school. And another way, and hopefully in ways that I've said it. Sometimes you're like, oh, this sounds like rock and roll, but it's good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So the kids' book was, okay, how can I make these, which I understand are mature themes in life, but if I give them some rhyme and they come in a song, which they did, it came from an actual dream in a song. I thought it was a Bob Dylan. It was a Bob Dylan ditty. Just because they threw the dart don't mean that it stuck. Just because I've got skills don't mean there is no luck. Just because. And so I just woke up and started writing down this little riff, this little ditty. And then with the themes that I knew I was trying to get across that I heard my own kids talking about, things that I think about life, but how can I package it? It's got a rhyme. It's got a ditty to it. It's got some illustrations to it. It's almost like having your being a comedian. A comedian get on stage and say certain things that you and I cannot necessarily go say directly out. hey, I got my comedian card.
Yep.
Children's book packages some things, adult themes in a way that go, I mean, it's a kid's book.
Yeah, right.
Right. It's innocent. There's an innocence to it, and it's digestible, and it's sort of uncondemnable.
Yeah.
And I'm not sneaking things in. I just packaged real truths that I believe are out there that I've crossed and come still trying to understand and have seen. Do you want to package it? Because I know with my children, they get stuff sooner than we give them credit for a lot of times. Yeah. But how do we give it to them? We can't expect my child to go sit down and read Aristotle.
Yeah.
Right? Understand it. But if I package some things in there and you go, oh, I understand that. And you want to talk about that? Have you been in this, son, daughter? And now we're in a conversation. The sooner they understand the context and nuances and poetry and paradox and contradictions of life, the better. Especially today when the world's more and more saying at a younger age, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
What do I want to do? What do I want to be? Whoa, I'm 12.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm for B12.
Yeah.
Especially now all the way through college. It's what liberal arts are for in the college. Liberal arts is all the furniture in the living room. And you don't have to decide on one favorite piece and just have that in your living room. Try things out.
Yeah. Got to explore. Yeah. And so you have some lines. Kyler and I took notes of some that stuck out to us. And I think hearing, okay, so phrasing that book, that in a way it was a little bit of a Trojan horse to even be able to get some of these ideas out there that adults can gnaw on and chew on. One, you talk about, just because I keep winning doesn't mean I'm a cheater. I mean, we're talking jealousy potentially here, right? And adults, like we deal with this. What does that line mean to you?
Oh, I mean, so I love that you picked that one out, because it's, you know, I have this line in Green Lights about, and we do this as a society. It's part of a rubbernecking to see the wreck on the other side of the road. It is part of, we find ourselves finding more joy and clapping when our opponent misses the shot.
Right.
It feels good.
That feels great. Having an enemy, being superior, right? Yeah.
But we get more excited and happy when they miss than when we make.
Yeah.
And that's out of whack. So when someone wins or someone's great at something, someone's better at us at something, our sort of default sort of, we're looking over our shoulder to kind of go, oh, they're probably cheating. And it's a cop out.
Yeah.
Most of the time, sometimes it's correct, but most of the time, it's why I say in the book, in Green Lights, my least favorite word is unbelievable. Quickly go, oh, unbelievable. Something must be, you know, Tiger Woods, he must have superior equipment.
Yep.
Yeah. we look for an excuse for greatness, and we're undercutting ourselves.
Yeah.
By doing that. Sometimes human potential and greatness, it happens.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not unbelievable, and applaud it. They're better than that. Hey, you didn't steal from mine. You gave me something to go for, and I don't know if I'll ever be as good as you are at that, but gosh, darn it. If we can applaud the actionable, when the human potential actually takes action, and there is, they're not necessarily cheating. Don't let yourself off the hook and go, oh, they're probably cheating, because that's just an excuse for ourselves 95% of the time.
Yeah, right. Well, that's so good. And I feel like too, what you're talking about here, it's cynicism, right? Mm-hmm. There's that little voice in the back of all of our heads that we see something good happening. It's much easier to say that person, they must have cheated. They had it handed to them. They X, Y, Z. Meanwhile, I'm sitting around, you know, being the critic. It's like that Teddy Roosevelt quote. It's not the critic who counts.
Right.
Really easy to be the critic. And yet it's like to do the opposite of that. And maybe the opposite of that is something like admiration, to admire people who are doing things that are working, that are good. When somebody scores, it's like, wow, that's a score. I can clap. You earn my salute. You know, I think you
did it. And our default is to think, well, if I give them recognition for doing really well, then that's taking from my own credit.
Right.
And it's not at all. It's like, some people like to see success, some people don't. And I think it's better for all of us, each of us, even us individually, to enjoy seeing success, because we got plenty of room for it and we're not peeking out.
Yeah.
By any means.
Yeah.
As individuals or society, you know, let's keep raising the bar.
Yeah. Well, even on that, the idea of success, you know, there's kind of advice out there. We've all heard it before. It's definitely cliche that says follow your dreams. Right. And some people do this. Other people like yourself have literally done this, right? You followed literal dreams. You've ended up in places like Africa, Peru, based off actual dreams that you had. I'm wondering if you could kind of explain that a little bit for us. Maybe you could touch on Africa and Peru, but even broader, like that notion, follow your dreams. What do you think of that?
Well, I have a snuggle struggle relationship with the old dreaming. Do it.
Yeah.
Too amnestic for me. It's a little too Hallmark Cardi. Hey, hurrah.
Yeah.
Because it's no action. And I think it's actually a really dangerous thing, ultimately, to sell on its own, just as follow your dreams. Dream it. You can do it. No, you can't. You have the dream. It takes a lot of steps to get to that dream and a lot of work to get to that dream. Yes, have the dream. I am for that, but it takes a lot of work to get to that. And if we're just selling to ourselves, to each other, if you dream it, you can do it. We see it. I've done it myself. So now I think I'm an expert because I dreamed it. Well, I saw it in my head, so it must be true. No, it's not. Or, you know, people that act like they're do you know what you're doing? Well, yeah, because I said I did.
Yeah.
Well, are you educated in that? No, I mean, I don't know what I'm doing, but I mean, if I say I do, then I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
Y'all have read Green Lights. I come from a mother who taught, like, if you believe you are, then you are. But she also pushed us to go work and go follow up to get to that point. And yeah, we can all fake it until we make it in certain ways. But just to leave dream it, you can do it alone.
Yes.
Is an insufficient and an incomplete message to be selling to children or ourselves. Yeah. Now, look, I had the dreams of Peru and Africa are related because they were the first dreams that I had that were absolutely and specifically the exact same dream I had the last time.
Okay.
They were.
And we're talking specifically like at night, you're dreaming and feeling like this keeps coming to you, right? So we clarify it for people.
Exactly. It didn't keep coming. It came to me exactly. Had it once.
Yeah.
Floating down the river, the Amazon, what I thought was the Amazon. Naked on my back, surrounded by anacondas, sharks, alligators, piranhas, everything that you would think would be an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
Tribesmen, African tribesmen holding shields and spears on the left bank all the way down to the horizon, thousands upon tens of thousands. And I'm floating on my back. And instead of it being a nightmare, it turns out to be a wet dream. 11 seconds, 11 frames, wet dream. I wake up. Whoa. I start to do the math. This is at least ironic. This juxtaposition of what the dream was and what the outcome was. Everything was there to be a nightmare. I should be waking up gritting my teeth with a bloody mouth, you know, but it wasn't. It was the opposite. It's beautiful. I had that once. I remembered it. Well, a few years later, I had the exact same dream. 11 seconds, 11 frames, exact same dream, exact same outcome. Now I wake up and go, whoa, okay. Too specific. Exact same dream. I'm being told something.
Yeah.
The message here, whether I believe it's a divine message, whether I believe that's God, whether I believe that's my subconscious, or all three, whatever that is, I go, okay, I need to heed this. I need to listen. So what do I know? What's the message? What do I know? What are the facts in the dream? Well, the facts that I only facts point of origin, because I was like, where's it telling me to go? What's it telling me to do? Were African tribesmen and Amazon. So I run to the Atlas and I open up the continent of Africa and I start searching for the Amazon.
Yeah.
In the dream, those are the two things, right?
Yeah.
Everyone, as you know, the Amazon's not in Africa. And I remember calling my buddy Bill and I was like, I'm having trouble finding damn Amazon over here in Africa. He goes, like, well, you're looking in the wrong continent, dude. I was like, oh. But you know how dreams go, that becomes the reality.
Yeah.
I find the Amazon and I go, and I said, that's my first point of interest. So I said, I'm going to go hike the Amazon and float the Amazon, which wow. I did. So that was it.
Yeah.
Done. Ah, I chased down the dream. Years later, I had the same dream again. I'm over in Dublin, Ireland, staying at the Morrison Hotel. And I have it again. It's that same dream. It's the third time I've had it. Well, what's it tell me? Well, I go, well, what's the one other point of origin geographically that I know? African tribesmen. And to my favorite musician, Ali Farka Touré. All of a sudden I go, because I'm thinking, where do I go in Africa? Mighty big continent. I don't know where to go.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm going, where's he from? Niafunke, Mali. Ah, where's that? It's on the Niger River. I'll go find him.
Here.
Get my one-way ticket. Boom. Found a boat. 4 days later, find him in Niafunke. Sit down. He doesn't know who I am. He meets me. I'm Dauda. Da-da-da-da-da. I want to bring up my favorite song of his that really inspired me. I'm nervous meeting him. I forget the name of the song. He goes to the TV and says, in through translation, that means I want you to see this song in Paris that I play. I make the rain stop. And he puts the song on, it's pouring rain in this video. And as he starts the notes, and he starts to sing and the rain stops. And it's that song.
Oh my gosh.
Here we go.
Oh my gosh.
In the day with him. And then I leave him and I'm like, okay, now where? And my guide, Issa, who's now become a long lifetime friend, had heard something I had said earlier in the trip. And he's like, I think I know a place we go. I know a place that's good for Dauda. A place that will stick with you for the rest of your life. And so we head off on a boat upriver and Timbuktu and hiked the Banja Gar and all this stuff. And it was a magical trip. And that I came back from that and that had fulfilled. All of a sudden, that had fulfilled it. I've not had the dream again since. I have gone back since,
yeah.
But I have been dreaming into that. That was the two part. And that fulfilled that dream. And that was my literal chasing of the dream. And two of the 100% most spiritual adventures and recognitions that I've had.
Yeah.
In my life, spirit that have led to a lot of spiritual and mental health for me.
Well, see, I mean, one sounds like the way to travel. I like that. You know, you kind of start dreaming of things and find the atlas and explore. Maybe people take a note on that. But then the courage to actually go and do it is another thing that to actually book the ticket. I mean, it's one, and that's what you're talking about.
And ticket. We talk about this. What's the hardest part about going to the gym?
Yeah. Yeah. It's doing it. And that's what you're saying. Your mom, that was the difference of like, hey, you can just dream. You can just dream over here. But if you're just a dreamer, you're just a dreamer. You got to be a doer of the dream.
Finding out is a really important thing to me. I mean, what keeps me up at night is not knowing something that I could have found out.
Okay.
Even if I found out that I didn't know.
Yeah.
I believe it's like, I want to be in the know. I also want to be in the know about what the hell I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Find out. And if I can find out by hook or by crook, succeed or fail, if it turns out to be what I thought it was going to be or not, I can go to sleep at night. Cause I'm like, oh, at least I found out.
Yeah.
Not knowing. Oh.
No, you can't sit with that. Yeah.
Have that I suppose that dream would have kept chasing me and I would have been incomplete unless I chased it down.
So do you feel like your life is comprised of those moments? Because that's something I would relate to, the idea of there's things that are begging to be discovered, found out, like what's on the other side of this. I don't know, but I'm realizing that the more I just kind of tuck this away, the more this keeps reoccurring. I owe it to myself to find out, and once I find out what's on the other side of this, then I'll know. And then another thing's going to come into my life. And then I'll find out what that thing is when that thing comes to me.
Amen. I think that's how it works. The challenge is, you know, you could say the dreams were signs. Okay. They're very clear ones to me. And only we know when they're clear to us. Mm-hmm. The challenge is trusting that the next ones will come. after you go find out what's on the other, that they'll come. If you're in the right place, you let them. And it's also a challenge not to create signs where they aren't there.
Yeah.
Which when we're seeking.
Yes.
And I mean, I've been in times in my life where I'm seeing a sign in every single thing my eyes land on. It's too much. The subplot is coming on. It's overload. No, everything is not art in and of itself. Whoa. Everything's with a note. And the signs come, I think, when we get enough notes together that we have a rhythm of a music and a tune in the way we're seeing and with our existence with the world, the way what we put out is reverbing back to us and really reciprocating. We're starting to see this dance. And then the signs are coming because we're in what they call a flow state.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But boy, when we're stuck and we're looking, oh man, it can be paralyzing.
Yeah.
Seeing a sign in everything, you know, is that, oh, that spider's on the window because I need to be more in touch with my left side of my brain, my subconscious. You can start.
Right. Oh, for sure. Well, and that's existentialism, right? Because you can assign any meaning to anything. That doesn't mean that that's right or that's what you're supposed to do. So there is some discernment needed. Yeah. And similar to even earlier when you're talking about the idea of following your dreams. Okay, that's a great statement to a certain degree. And a lot of context is needed with that. Just follow your dreams. That's not the complete manual. That's not going to do it, right? So you need some discernment with this when it comes to dreams. But speaking of another dream or even a goal, I guess you could say, something you once wrote was that one of your 10 goals in life was to become an egotistical utilitarian. Amen. And I heard you talk about this once and I was blown away because I don't think I had ever heard somebody describe exactly what you touched on here. Would you mind for our listeners defining this term, the egotistical utilitarian?
Arian, yes. And I still believe that. I'm still working on that. Ego, I, me, identity. What I want to do it for me. Hmm. Selfish.
Yeah.
Yes. Utilitarian. I want to do what's best for the most amount of others. Hmm. Be selfless. Yeah. Those two are not a contradiction. Hmm. Those two are inherently combined. We have to have an ego and an identity to have discernment, to have judgment.
Yeah.
But there's this place where the I meets the we. That's the honey hole, I think, for all of us, where it's got to be personal. It can also be what's best for the most amount of people, or what's best for our loved ones, or what's best for the world. Those are not a contradiction. Those are not opposing forces. And we got to put them in two different camps. I think we have no judgment with that identity. We have no discernment. We have no style, no sense of choice. So it has to come through our vessel first, and we need to see it with the eye. Now, when we understand that actually when we are doing what's truly selfish for ourselves, not what we've been branded selfish at the expense of our neighbors, that's not true selfishness. Mm. Selfishness is when you are in that spot where the choices for yourself are what's best for your neighbor as well. That's true selfishness. That is the long-term, long money residuals that pay who back? Them and ultimately who?
Right. Yeah.
Huh. If we can project further into the future when we're making choices and say, actually, what will pay me back? What would be the ultimately more selfish choice for me to make right now? Sometimes it's sacrificing an immediate want for a longer term need that you're going to. I tell this simple little story. It's because I try to make this fun sometimes. Some of these are not deep and meaningful. Some of them are like, I'm driving down the road the other day. It's packed traffic to 40 mile an hour, 2-lane highway, but there was so much traffic, everyone's going 15 miles an hour. This lady's trying to get in off the side road into the road. I got cars stacked up behind me and cars in front. I slow down, let her come in front. Couple people by me, bam, bam, bam. Where are we going? Jeez, we're not, one more car back. We're not getting anywhere. We drive for 15 minutes slowly. I get back to my house. I notice this car has been in front of me the whole way. As I pull in my driveway, this car pulls into the driveway next to me. And as I get out of my car, this woman gets out of her car. The neighbor I hadn't met, and says, "Thank you for letting me in back there." I said, "You're welcome." Now, that's ultimately was a selfish move, whether I knew it or not. It was selfless in the moment, but now I got a neighbor that's looking over my house when I'm out of town.
Yeah, yeah.
Or that found our dogs that got off the lead. I got out of the yard the other day and brought them back over. I don't know. Does she bring them back over if I don't let her in, or she doesn't know me now and I didn't let her in? I don't know. You know, it's a mystery going forward and a science looking back. But that was I didn't let her in thinking maybe I'll get something out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that balance.
But not something, right? And as we go through life, there is a form of service that is incredibly selfish because we're building soldiers with us. We're building an army of strangers with us.
Yeah.
That have our back, that go, yeah, you did that for me and I'm going to do this for you. And we don't even have to know each other.
Yeah.
To know your name. And that's ultimately much more selfish, I think, than just going forward and saying, I'm feeding the one and the need for the eye with no semblance or no consideration for what may be what someone else needs.
Yeah. Well, that's putting your oxygen mask on first, right? Selfish, selfless. It's like, well, you're doing something for yourself, but look what you can do after, right? And I think it's really easy to think.
Have no harm.
Yeah.
If you're not feeding, if you're only feeding the cows, but not feeding your family.
Yeah. Yeah, it's easy to think in terms of just like this zero sum game, right? Winner, loser, I win, you lose, but win-win. I feel like that's kind of what you're talking about. And I think sometimes selfish and selfless aren't necessarily at odds. I mean, I look at what you're doing, right? You're doing so many different things, right? You're on a podcast right now. You also do books, you do acting, you're involved as an entrepreneur, many different things. Now, some could look at that and say, wow, this guy is living a life for himself. These are selfish pursuits, acting. Why do we need acting? But right. Look at how many people you're inspiring moving through those acting roles, right? So I don't think it's either or. I don't think it's either or. So I appreciate you kind of defining that term for us.
I don't think it is either or. I do think my hunch right now, where the way I'm something I'm working through a philosophy right now in life is that it's actually needs to be even more personal.
Yeah.
Meaning you want thanks, but you don't want to do things for thanks. Hmm. Meaning I want to go do those roles. I'm a better actor when I'm doing it for me.
Yeah.
Now a byproduct may be that it inspires other people. But I don't think I'm doing my job as well if I'm sitting there going like, well, what would be the best role to put out there that could be the best message for? No.
Right.
Like when I started writing Greenlights, the first 10 days, I started writing, thought I needed to write. I was trying to write impressively to impress people. Wow, that's really good. And I noticed 10 days, you're full of BS, McConaughey. Don't write to impress. Write well, and it may be impressive, but do not write to impress. Hmm. I ultimately think it's actually the more selfish we get in the true sense of the word. And I'm on a mission to redefine this word because it's got taboo bad. It's good because it's become a scarlet letter.
Yeah.
That it actually, the more personal it is, the better. That actually you could argue that the more service you give, the more selfish you are being. Hmm. That the more selfish you actually are, the more you're actually going to be serving.
Hmm.
You know it or not.
Yeah.
It's truly selfish.
Well, it's interesting. There's a, actually, you talk about this book that you love. It's called Greatest Salesman in the World. And I read this recently. So as you're talking about that, there was one of these core principles on how to be successful. And it says, I am nature's greatest miracle.
That's the one my son's on right now.
Okay, cool. Which is basically talking about like you are unique. You know, God created you on this earth. You yourself are unique. You're rare. if you can lean into that, there's one of you. Anything rare in life has a ton of value. There's purpose. And just hearing you explain that, that's what I was thinking about, because we want to live out our purpose per se, and whether that's one thing or multiple things, you know, we're on this journey to find that. But it, I think it starts with that core belief, right? That core belief that you are a miracle, that you have value. Yeah. And on that, it's funny, after now reading this book, so our company, The Outbound Life, we've formed it on two core principles. So we're trying, we feel in every work that we do, we want to inspire others to, one, believe your story matters, and two, live beyond your limits. Because, and I think it goes in that progression where first you have to believe that you matter. So it's exactly this. You have to believe that you are a miracle, and then it basically can open up doors to explore areas of uncomfort, pushing into things that used to hold you down. And for us, when we started to kind of look at life or business through that way, I feel like it opened up a lot of doors. But that's cool to hear that your son's kind of processing through that right now.
And if you look, very interesting thing, that's the fourth scroll. Mm. Let's not be remiss of the three previous scrolls that were the scroll foundation to set up this, your nature's greatest miracle, which is more of a dream. But what are the foundations that came before that?
Yeah.
First, I will form good habits and become their slave. Second one, I will greet this day with love in my heart. Third one, I will persist until I succeed.
Yeah.
We have form good habits, love, and endure before we say, your nature's greatest miracle, man, fly.
Yeah.
Get rid of your dampen your similarities, shine a light on your uniqueness. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's sort of that. The first three are teaching us to use a sports metaphor. The first three of those scrolls are teaching us to block and tackle before we play wide out. Let's learn the rules of the game. Let's get ourselves in shape before we go, now I can shine a light on how unique I am. And that also means we don't need to poo-poo on, we need accountants. We need people that are like, I'm not a creative. I'm left brain, man. I just like get stuff in order. We need to make sure we don't devalue that. Mm. And that side of the brain work that we have in civilization, I think, as well.
Yeah, 100%. McConaughey, another thing we wanted to touch on, you talk about a lot of difficult hurdles you've had to either overcome or your family, loved ones. Our oldest brother actually has been fighting a serious autoimmune disease this year, and for the past 8 months hasn't been able to walk, and it's just been super discouraging. I'm curious, from your perspective, someone that is going through maybe their most difficult journey of their life so far, specifically for him, what advice would you have, whether it's psychologically or something else, to keep persisting?
How is he spiritually?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I'd have to check in with him on that. But definitely, you know, each doctor visit is bad news lately. And it's just like, you go, how many more punches can you take?
Yeah. I mean, look, I can't ask him or anyone else to believe this, but I do believe, whether I even know it or not, I do believe that every challenge or hardship or downturn, that there's a reason for it that we may not realize. There's a gift in it. I talk about it in Green Lights. There's a gift in every red light, whether we realize it or not. And we may find out that gift in this life. We may not find out in this life. You guys might find it out. Your kids might be the first ones to find it out.
Yeah.
There is, I know that's maybe no more than a warm blanket. You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe some comfort, but in the idea spiritually, I don't believe that it's over.
Yeah. Yes.
Even if we're saying someone goes and even if you're agnostic, do you believe it's over what you leave, what you left behind? We have children, we have brothers. That's our immortality. We have sisters. That's our immortality.
Yeah.
And what we leave them, did we change their life for the better? Did we upsell them just a bit? Did they come to an understanding that maybe they wouldn't have had without us? Those are incredible, priceless gifts.
Yeah.
And that I would just say that's our, it just to be thinking in that realm and feeling spiritually in that realm to understand the gifts that you're given into being around your loved ones is very and more than constructive. I think it's true, and things just it can be a comforting thing to understand.
Yeah. Well, amen to that. And yeah, we've been surrounding them with prayer, and you know, I think that's it's kind of what you're talking about. But Matthew, we have to wrap up here. We're super grateful that you took some time to hang out with us today and impart your wisdom. So thank you so much. Yeah, it means so much.
Keep on loving each other. Good to see y'all side by side, man. Hope to see y'all side by side for the rest of the time. Obviously, it looks like you're going to be. And luck to you, brother. Keep on loving.
Thanks.
Thanks so much. All right. Going. Thank you.
A few closing thoughts, guys. First, we're so grateful you took the time to listen today. It really means a lot to us to be able to share our journey with you. Second, if you got any value or inspiration from this episode, please take a minute to leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Lastly, remember, your story matters. So go for it today and live the outbound life.